Yes, I'm sure it's not that important, Kale. You can kind of hear everybody. We have another gaggle.
It's all about the feel.
A goose, a gaggle, whooping, guides, and people, all kinds of stuff.
A surfeit.
A surfeit?
A surfeit.
Okay, as you can tell, there is Fish and Frank in the chair here. We have Vinny in the chair across from me. We have Captain Kale in his place. And we have Andrew, who is yet to find a place, but he's looking for one. Yep. He's almost found it. Yep. And let's see if I can get Frank to shut up on the guitar. Okay, stop. All right, Frank, calm down. All right, there we go. Okay, now, getting more back to reality. Morning, Vinny.
Good morning.
Morning, Kale.
Or afternoon.
Good morning.
Good morning, Andrew.
Howdy.
And now I was able to drag them all into the belief that this is morning and it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. See? I mean, that's the mark of a true leader. When you can get the people around you to believe it's morning when it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's radio. It doesn't matter.
You're willing to go a long way.
We're doing this show next week.
We're really not going to be here till next week. Okay. Yeah, we were sitting there. We said, we'll do a show. What are we going to do it about? I don't know. It's windy out there, boys and girls.
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. That all that nice clear water is going to be gone again.
Yeah, I think it's sustained at 20, going up to 25 small craft advisories.
They're
even saying,
evening.
You know, you should get off the lakes and stuff. I mean, it's the seas are angry.
Well, the nice thing is I can get back onto the flats.
Yeah,
I like it being murky in the flats. When it's clear, I like fishing out in the middle of the harbor.
Okay, good point. Vinny, your thought? Clear or dirty? Clear or murky? Which one's better for you back on the flats?
You know, I'm good with murky on the flats. You know, the redfish don't seem bothered by it, and they're not really hunting by sight. They're hunting by scent. So, murkier water in the flats
murky.
Is better.
Murky. Element of surprise on my side.
So we got three guys all saying back on the flats it's actually easier, better fishing if it's murkier, the water's a little... I guess when you're fishing in 2-3 feet of water and you're coming in with a 20-foot, 24-foot boat, it's easier to sneak up on them if they can't see you.
Much, much easier.
Yep.
And you can get closer. We're starting to get some decent greenbacks up in the upper harbor, but for the past month it's been nothing but thread fins,
right,
which are harder to cast than
now,
a greenback.
We've been talking about that quite a bit because of the obvious problems with weight. A 3.5-inch thread fin weighs about maybe 30-40% as much as a 3.5-inch greenback.
Absolutely.
So what about a casting bubble put on between the hook and the leader knot? Clear plastic bubble, fill it with water, toss it out there.
I don't see why it wouldn't work. The only thing that I wouldn't like about it, usually if I'm using a bobber with thread fins or greenbacks, it's not so much a strike indicator as it is a bait locator. So
yeah,
I can cast it out there and see when he swims out from underneath the trees.
But what I'm talking about is completely full of water.
Right.
Don't leave any air in it. So when it hits the water, it becomes not a sinking aspect or a floating.
It's
just
kind
of neutral. So the thread fin would pull it around more like he would free line. So it would be a free line assist.
I'm going to have to grab a handful and give it a shot, see how they work.
Yeah.
We've used them on tarpon with relative success. I don't see why they wouldn't work on snook and redfish.
You know, I've never used one, but I can't say that I've ever had a need to use them, because normally, you know, if I'm fishing for tarpon, I'm going to have a bobber or I'm going to have a balloon on the line. And just let the wind carry that bait away.
Right. Now, some of the times what you get into is you're sitting on the front of the boat, you've got a couple rods and holders off the back with your lines out, standard bobbers and stuff, but now you're sitting there with that bait and you're trying, the tarpon seem to have an understanding about how close they can get within casting distance sometimes. You know, they're right there.
Right on that edge.
You move a little closer, they just move away a little bit. And I've seen that with greenbacks trying to throw a cast net on them. They're just over there, and finally you get so disgusted you throw and you get a couple pieces, but the vast bulk of them were just out of distance. So if you could throw a clear plastic bubble on full of water, then when it hits the water, you know, in the air, it's very, very heavy. Water's heavy. And then when it hits the water, it becomes nothing. So that would give you that extra distance. And when you're throwing little thread fins up against the shoreline, sometimes distance is, and you guys all said murky water, but what happens if the water clears up? And you've got to make those distance casts with a thread fin.
Yeah.
And if you left a little tiny bit of air on the top of it, it would give it just a little bit of lift to it, too.
Sure.
So, you know, I think if you played with it and said, okay, if I got a quarter-inch bubble of air in there, it gives it a little bit of a rise, but not that much, and may end up being good. Carl was using them in very shallow water as a bobber, and so it was a clear bubble, so they couldn't see it. They weren't being afraid of it. But it was a clear bobber.
And how many times have we talked about coloring our bobbers with a magic marker to keep them from being so noticeable and white? Right. We've been painting them green and black and brown and to camouflage our bobbers. With those, you wouldn't have to.
And that's what Carl found out, fishing those redfish back in that real clear, skinny water with a lot of grass on the bottom. He used the clear bubble with no water in it as a bobber. And
all it would look like is one of the 10 million jellyfish that are roaming around out there.
Or just a bubble in the water.
Yeah.
I mean, literally like a bubble, you know? So, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to this. But I think the weight, I think this is going to become more of a popular thing. None of us are used to it.
It's definitely one of the most versatile things that we don't use.
Exactly. It's one of the most versatile things we don't use. Perfectly said.
I've never used them.
Yeah, I haven't either, and I know
I'm probably the only one here who has used them on a regular basis.
You've been talking about that bubble now for at least 8 months that I can remember now. Gonna have to bring one home.
Yeah. Well, we were falling into the same thing that I complain about, and that is how afraid fishermen are of change.
Exactly.
We don't like change. Period.
Creatures of habit.
Well, we get in our comfort zones. Every one of us.
Absolutely.
I've seen captains go out, and they got six spots they fish because they produce on a semi-regular basis, you know, so they feel comfortable, and they don't break out of there. And I was a big proponent that when I did a charter, my customers are going to spend a spot, at least a half an hour, 40 minutes, fishing in one spot that I either hadn't been to in years or had never been to, and it was just a random, I'm driving along, okay, I'm gonna turn left, go up to the shore and fish for no reason whatsoever, then what the heck. And it was sometimes a complete disaster and sometimes unbelievably successful. You know, you had three different phases, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yep.
So, you know, it was, but that to me was one of the reasons I was successful being a charter boat captain, trying not to let myself get hung up in those patterns. And I think we get hung up in patterns on how we fish.
Oh, I do it all the time. I'm one of the worst ones for getting hung up in spot patterns. I'm going to go here first, here second, here third.
Yep.
Tomorrow I'm going to go here first, here, and it's the same spots as yesterday. I have to tell myself, listen, stupid, you need to go someplace else.
Mm-hmm. And you're not alone in that. Now, Vinny, you've been working here a long time now, and have you noticed that when people come down and they've seen people fishing on a pier, they all want to fish the same way?
In the same spot on the pier.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's literally, this is what I saw somebody do, so this is what I want to do. Even though they see them not catching many fish.
Yeah.
Or they want to use the same method for everything that swims. I want to catch a snook, but I want to fish this way. Well, that's great for cobia and shark, but I want to work for snook. They, like you said, they see people doing it, and they want to do it the exact same way, regardless of what species it is. They just say, hey, it worked. They caught fish.
You know, what's ridiculous is how bad of a store owner I am. I talked a guy out of him about a $300 sale this morning because he was coming in and said, I want this, this, and this. And I said, well, what are you going to do? He's telling me, well, I got, you know, the women on the boat, and, you know, I got these rods for him, and I want to do this, this, and this with it. And I'm like, are you sure? You know, and then we went through, and, you know, I dropped a lot of weights on some rods, and we worked through a bunch of stuff. And he says, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know if that's right. I said, well, you have this. And he had a rod that was snapped off and put a new tip on it and showed him that it was actually, since he broke his rod, it was actually better than it was when it was designed by the factory. Now it's more powerful. It works better. It's more control. And we kind of went off of there into the all the other rods. And now what he's going to do is he's going to put that broken rod together with a spinning reel and have the wife work with that, and then have her work with his conventional and see which one is better, rather than just spending a lot of money on a conventional reel that I was not convinced would benefit her. You know, and I think I got to learn how not to talk people out of spending all this money. <laughs> You know? But it goes along with the same way I approach fishing. If you're from Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Indiana, New York, New Jersey, whatever, and you fish, why wouldn't you fish the same way here?
Well, you can, to an extent. But like Andrew said, people get locked up into fishing, period, one way, and it really doesn't fly down here all the time. Okay. If I go back home to my lake, we have muskie, we have pike, we have walleye, we have smallmouth bass, and we fish for those generally the same ways. Whether you're putting a night crawler onto a jig head and bouncing it down that shale ledge, or you're trolling the shorelines with lures. That's basically how we do all of our fishing up there, regardless of species, because it works. But all right. You can't fish for redfish and tarpon the same way all the time.
I disagree.
All the time.
Yeah, but why, if you coming down from there and you're used to trolling a shoreline for pike or for whatever you were talking about, trolling a shoreline should be great for fishing snook. Catching snook.
Absolutely.
Or even redfish.
Absolutely.
I mean, so to me, the argument you made supported my point.
But how many grouper are you going to catch doing that?
Didn't say it was going to work for grouper, but my point was, if that's the way you fish and that's the way you know how to fish, why wouldn't you at least try it here? What state did you come in from, Vinny?
From Texas, and you know, did a lot of bass fishing in Texas. And I believe if you know how to bass fish in a lake, and you come down here, you're 90% there.
Okay, so...
And I completely disagree with that.
See, I'm not sure.
Mute him, Frank.
I do have a button here. Okay, try it again, Kale. Okay, there you go. All right.
In all the charters, every time, the one that gets me shaking my head are the big-time bass guys. Because you would expect them to be able to make those casts underneath those mangroves. You would expect them to have a better grasp of it. I think your bass fishermen get caught up in that this way has to be the way more than any other species.
I don't agree, except on the hook side.
Oh, you can't break them with that.
I mean, You had the best idea. You take a string, you put a treble hook, you stick it in the crotch of their pants, you tie the other end of the string to the fishing
first
pole, and when they go to jerk that rod, they don't after the first one.
It is hard breaking them that hook set.
And the only thing is, I set the hook on virtually every fish. I got to set a hook. I learned to do it. I have to do it. And even if I got circle hooks, I set the hook. I have to. And, you know, when
I'm sure you were getting some good positive reinforcement every time you didn't set the hook when you were a kid.
Yeah,
that a guess.
Yeah, you met my dad. And so when, you just can't set the hook as hard. That's the biggest difference. You still set the hook, but you just don't, pull so hard you fall off the other side of the boat.
Right. Yeah, you can technically set a circle hook.
I do it all the time.
I do it, too.
So, now, Vinny, I'm more in your camp, because my big thing is, if you're coming here trying to learn new water, new fish, new lures, new techniques, new everything, and you have a week to do it, to me, I found it virtually impossible. Traveling through Europe and fishing my way across Europe and everything, working over there selling fishing tackle and stuff, I learned I had to do what I knew how to do best. I looked at the water. I gauged it with my eye. What's the color? So I could pick my color lure. Is it fast moving, slow moving? Do I have eddies? Do I have this? Where are fish likely to be? And I used the lures I knew, the techniques I used, I knew, and judged it with how I knew of fish that I knew. Kind of thinking that most fish are fish. So I was actually pretty darn successful. And when it wasn't, then I really reached out and tried to find out what the locals were doing. And that was my, but that was plan B rather than plan A. I didn't want to have to go down and learn what all the locals do, figure out this rig, figure out that rig, get this lure, get that, you know, change everything I did, because I was only in that spot one day or 2 days.
Sure.
Because over there, you buy your license for that day, for that spot. And then when you want to go to a different place, you got to go back and buy another license to go to the other spot. Permits. Because I applied for my license. I got a year-long license for fishing in Germany. And it allowed me to fish for 32 days of that year. And, you know, but you only get, you know, you got to go and pay for a place at the Sparkies. You got to go play for a place at this place. You got to, you know, and that's the way it was over there. We think it's weird here. To understand it, it would be like if you want to fish Elgebine, you buy a permit for Elgebine.
Right.
Now, if you want to go to 41, you got to come back in and buy another permit to fish the 41 bridge. That's exactly what it's like.
That'd kill people over here.
That would just make them nuts.
They complain about the $10.50 snook stamp.
Yeah. and then figure it the other way around it is... There's just so many different rules that we take for granted. Over there, you're not allowed to fish until you're 12 years old. And you have to go to school, pass a class on fish before you can have your license. So kids aren't allowed to fish over there. You have to be an adult to fish.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
The world is not the same place as what we think it is. Because we're Americans, we think the whole world does what the U.S. does. And it's just not that way. So, now, Andrew, what is your thoughts on if somebody comes down, should they try what they already know how to do?
To some extent. Normally what I tell them to do is let me know the method of which they're going about it, what they're typically using back home, and try to apply that as best I can to methods that I'm familiar with fishing down here. It threw me for a loop because I fished the Arctic Circle, and we went up there targeting lake trout and Arctic char. So me coming from down here, going up there, I wanted to try all these different methods, and all we ended up doing for a week was getting dropped off at a lake every day and trolling spoons for lake trout and Arctic char.
Yep.
And that was it. That was the only method that they used up there. You know, you could bring a fly rod and try, but most of your luck was just pitching a spoon out behind the boat and trolling around the lake that day.
I went into a place, you know, you've been to Colorado, haven't you, Vinny?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lake by the Lower Taylor, and it's a, I guess, a very famous lake, and I cannot remember the name of it. And they use lake trout flashers and all that. And I was watching all these people, and they all went into the place, and you rented your tackle and got that stuff. Then you rented a boat, and everybody went out on this lake. And they're all doing the exact same thing. I thought, I don't see them catching fish. So what can I do to make this different? So I didn't have a lot of stuff with me, but I had a bunch of split shots. So I loaded up with a deep diving rainbow trout looking lure, and I went about 4 feet up the line and put every split shot I had on it, try and get it down, and dropped that down, and I was catching fish. And I actually, you know, did better than what they were doing. Because I watched everybody rent the same tackle, get the same flashers, the same boat, and we're all sitting there, and we're all doing the same thing. And now, isn't that the definition of, okay, I'm going to keep doing the exact same thing, expecting different results?
Yeah.
I'm not that lucky. I'm not lucky on, you know, I can't walk up to a slot machine, pull a handle, and win money. So
you gotta work at our fish.
Yeah, I gotta be creative.
Our biggest hurdle, I think, down here is always going to be the environment. People just aren't used to the different types of environment that we have to fish down here. I came from a relatively deep water lake, so fishing in 2 feet of water was kind of new to me.
That's why people buy outdrives.
I didn't mind underneath the mangroves because at the same time I was fishing trout streams. So your casting accuracy is just as important in a small little trout stream as it is against the mangroves. The deep water fishing in our harbor was almost semi-new to me. And you have all those different environments that we have here to fish that people aren't used to. People are used to fishing their local area, their local lake, and it being that one environment that never changes. Never mind throwing in tides and current and right. all that other stuff on top of it.
Now, Vinny, coming from Texas, what happened to you when you got here?
Well, you know, and I see this with a lot of customers that come down here. We used to go to the Gulf Coast, Corpus Christi, and those areas and fish offshore, but 90% of the time we're bass fishing in lakes. And, you know, first thing you got to learn when you come down here is you need a leader. You know, when I was bass fishing, we were using monofilament line. We weren't hooking a leader up to that.
6, 10-pound test.
Yeah. Or yeah. 12-pound maybe, but you're not using a leader. So
that was completely new to me, too.
Rule number one, you got to have a leader. A lot of people come down here, they think they need steel.
Boy, you see that a lot, don't you?
You do. And I've talked more people out of buying steel leader here than you
see, but that's another one that's Disney's fault.
Yeah.
Because all saltwater fish have teeth and will tear your hand off. That's what you learn when you come from
sound like Disney.
That's what you
sounds R-rated.
But you see it everywhere.
But that's Disney. Yeah.
Where you see it. I mean, I was no different when I first started saltwater fishing. It was in California. Coming from the freshwater lakes, like you said, you never use leader. What's this? What do we need this for? Okay, I can't touch anything because it's going to kill me. It's going to bite me. It's going to take fingers off. It's going to take chunks of skin. That's why I need to have a leader.
Now, to me, if somebody's fishing braid and they're not using a monofluorocarbon leader, to me, it's like fishing a steel leader.
Yeah.
Because fish see the braid. And so it's less, and you know, everybody calls it a shock leader. And to me, that creates a false impression. It's like a shock absorber. And that's ridiculous. It is not. It is the shock of the attack to me. When we were throwing mono, and everybody says, no, you can't use a swivel. Well, not using a swivel was a monofilament line thing. Putting monofilament line to a mono or fluorocarbon leader was exceptionally sneaky. And as people started to do that and really, you know, you're throwing 10-pound test, tossing it out there, and the fish would chew through it immediately, so you put heavy line on the end. When we took the swivel off, now it was just kind of clear all the way down. But with braided, what's the difference if you have a swivel there to your leader or not? Because the braid is visible. So the swivel issue to me is ridiculous. If you tie a good knot in the braid to the swivel and a good knot to the leader to the swivel, yep, you got the exact same thing.
Right.
And the same guys who tell me, no, that will spook the fish, put a split shot on. Now, Vinny, how do you weigh in on this? Does a split shot scare more fish than a swivel?
I don't think either one scares them any more than one or the other. But, I mean, 9 times out of 10, I'm not going to use a split shot, and I'm not going to use a swivel unless I'm using a lure.
But
that
why aren't you using a swivel?
Don't want to crack your ceramic guides.
Exactly. Because you reel most of your leader up into your first rod eye to make that underhand cast into the mangroves.
Mm-hmm.
Same with me. I don't use swivels for one simple reason. And Frank, you being a charter captain, you've seen it. You're going to start seeing it. How those people reel that fish right up to the first rod eye.
Yep.
Kiss that first rod eye and the second one and probably the third one goodbye with a swivel.
The good news is I don't have customers.
Right.
So, you know, we're not
doing that.
It just
goes to show, like Frank always says, as a charter captain, you're going to fish completely different than you do as a normal fisherman. When I go out and fish with me and Barb, I fish completely different. I rig up completely different. I actually use jig heads.
Right.
I never use them on the charters.
Now, Andrew, what's your thought on swivel, line to line, braided, mono, leader, no leader?
Well, I think the biggest thing with the braid is the main reason I always tell customers that they need to run some monofilament for a leader on is because everybody thinks that the braid is the strongest thing out there. They think it's bulletproof, but in reality, it's more susceptible to being cut by oysters and barnacles. It's like taking a pocket knife to thread. It's going to cut a lot easier than...
Especially under tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you put it under tension, braid cuts easier than mono.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. People will not believe that. That is something they're going to say, you guys are ridiculous, but we've tested it time and time again.
No, I always try and show them. I give them both a 2-3 foot piece of mono and a 2-3 foot piece of braid. I hand them my knife and I say, I want you to rub the blade on this. And their eyes always get real big when they see that the braid breaks almost instantly when you put a knife blade to it. And then the mono, they're sitting there hacking away at it for a couple minutes trying to figure out, well, why is this stuff so much stronger than the supposed bulletproof stuff?
Let me throw this one out. I fish with Darlene all the time. She will not use braid unless we're offshore and I twist her arm.
Right.
But she's using monofilament with a fluorocarbon leader, and she will get more hookups than I will. Every time. I always use braid with fluorocarbon.
I'm the biggest advocate for monofilament in open water and braid against the mangroves. For the simple reason, I cannot break monofilament when it's stuck in the branches of a mangrove. I get missiles flying back at me. I have had black and blue marks, wounds, hooks in me from... Yeah, you've got
from split shots
right in the leg.
From split shots, sinkers, hooks, all that coming back as a bullet because the mono stretched so much, and then when it did release, it was under an elastic band tension. And with braid, even 20 pound, I wrap my put my hand on a rag, wrap it around the line, a quick jerk, and it pops. And yep. I can easily break braided. I cannot easily break monofilament.
I tell all my clients on my educational trips, here, put this split shot on your leader. And you watch them put it on there, then grab the pliers and crimp it right on there. I said, now take that off. I said, now watch. And I put them on finger tight. Finger tight, that's it. Don't bite them down. Don't cramp them down with a pair of pliers. That leader or that line gets stuck in the tree and you start pulling on it. What does that leader material do? It stretches. As it stretches, it loses diameter. That split shot drops off into the water. Now it's not rocketing back at you at 1,000 mile an hour.
Well, it doesn't with braid anyway.
It will if the leader breaks at the hook. That's still enough stretch on that monofilament to rocket that thing back. I've had them do it. That's okay. Why I only pinch them down now. It's much cheaper to replace split shots than it is eyeballs.
Or teeth.
Or teeth.
Yeah.
Now, I'm still of the camp that the reason monofilament was so successful was it is fluorocarbon sneakier, but it's almost impossible to use. It
yes.
just throws like wire. It's horrible line.
Yes.
Great leader.
Absolutely
horrible line. And it reminds you of the monofilament of the 30s, 40s, 50s, where, yes, it's plastic, but it's stiff, it's ungainly. And it wasn't until the 60s they learned how to, in the 50s and 60s, by the mid-60s, they had monofilament pretty much figured out. And it took 30 years, but they got it. And it casts good, it works good, and it's sneaky. It's clear plastic. It's the reason it's so horrible for fish, because they can get caught up, they don't see it.
Right.
So monofilament line with a fluorocarbon leader tied line to line to me is the ultimate in sneakiness. And if I was going to fish a tournament where I had to fish clear water for redfish on a bar or whatever I was fishing for in more or less open water around there, it would be with mono. But now I still go back to the braided when I hit the trees. I don't know why, but I've kind of got that down. But I actually truly believe 10 to 20% more hookups minimum with mono over braided line.
I agree.
Yeah, I can't argue that.
That's like if you go down to the guys that bonefish in the Keys. Hardly any of them have braided line on their reels. Water's so clear down there.
Plus, it's a fish with very good eyesight.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, the one thing I always try and explain to people is you don't always cast before the fish. They don't always come up to the bait. Sometimes you're casting beyond the fish, and bringing your bait up to them, so the first thing they see is that line overhead.
Yeah, exactly.
And so as you're bringing the bait up to them, they see the line first. Now the object behind the leader is to put a little bit of invisibility between the very visible braid and your bait, kind of like when you're playing with a cat, and you've got a little toy mouse on a string and you're running it around. 80% of the time, the cat goes after the mouse.
Sure.
20% of the time, he goes after the string.
Right.
And I think the same thing applies to fish. Okay, everybody's nodding their heads. Now, we have to remember we're on radio, and it's really hard for anybody to hear that.
Hear me nodding my head now.
Well, you also got to think how many times you've had a bobber out there and had fish popping at the bobber. Kind of same thing. Sometimes they're completely missing the lure and they're seeing something else.
Tarpon are good for that.
Now, now, I don't have near the faith in monofilament. If I get into a good tug of war with a decent-sized redfish or a snook, I want braided line.
Yeah, but that's a false sense of security.
Well, it is, but
it's my security.
It's my security, my God.
I got my blanket.
You know,
I am Linus. This is my blanket. I don't care what you say, Charlie Brown. I'm not letting go of my blanket.
Your 15-pound monofilament's probably going to break at 15 pounds. Your 15-pound braid is probably going to break closer to 25 or 30. If you are actually using
30%.
At least. I mean, even the guys from Penn said the Invisibraid is 50% underrated.
Okay, but that didn't make any sense to what you just said, did it? Was that...
Well, yeah, if you actually fished with braid, that it feels so strong because it's so underrated. If you were actually fishing, take some of that 8 or 10 pound...
If you said 15 was half of what it says, 15 would actually be 25 or 30 almost.
That's what it is.
Okay, so I don't understand what you're...
You get that false sense of security with braid because you're fishing... That 15-pound braid feels so much stronger than 15-pound monofilament. Well, that's because it is. If it wasn't, you wouldn't have that false sense of security. You'd be just as gentle on that fish with the 15-pound braid that actually broke at 15 pounds as you would with the 15-pound monofilament that actually broke at 15 pounds.
All right, so now I'm getting what you're saying. You're saying the braid is so heavy...
Right.
And it's so much stronger than advertised that you'll pull harder. You'll fight harder.
Absolutely.
Vinny?
I will. But the big thing to me with the braid is, you know, take a 10-pound or a 15-pound braid, put it on a 2,500 or 3,000 class spinning reel with a silver spoon, and you can throw that lure a mile. And so when you're fishing the flats, whether you're inside the bar or outside the bar, you can completely cross the bar, cover a lot of territory.
Sure.
Monofilament, it ain't going to happen.
Okay, Andrew?
I think that's why it's gained so much popularity, is because people use it for that reason, because of no memory, smaller diameter. You know, you get less friction going through the guide, so you are casting a little bit further. But a lot of people... you know, go a little bit beyond that and think it's just the best in the world, and they think it's bulletproof, and they think it's, in all reality, like I was talking about earlier, you will break it, it will cut a lot easier in mono, so you,
but open water, there's nothing to cut.
No,
so
that's where it comes into play, and that's where it's really beneficial. But
you know, it's with the braid, it's about the casting distance, be able to throw heavier line, sometimes 40% farther than you could throw monofilament.
Yes.
But how many people you get come in and say, well, all these guys say I need to be fishing braid, and they don't, you know, think about the reasons as to why they're actually using it. They just think it's unstoppable.
You know, aside from me thinking it's just stronger, I get tired. You hook up a decent fish, next thing you know, your monofilament's stretched, and you got to re-spool your reel. You know, and that's one of the drivers for me why I keep braid on mine is
it's not an issue anymore.
I don't have to keep putting new line on it.
Well, they both have their pros and their cons. That's why I always try and educate people when they come in what makes them different and what's good for what and what's good for the other thing. Mm. So that's why I always try.
The one thing I've never understood is people will use braid inshore, redfish and snook. They'll use it on tarpon. They'll use it on cobia here inside. Everybody uses monofilament when they're dropping straight down for grouper. Wouldn't that be the perfect place for braided line?
Yeah.
Why do people shy away from it when they're dropping straight down for grouper?
Okay. Thank you. No, I'm game. I'm going to call it, to me, the reason that you're going to do braid over mono when you get out in that deep water is because of the thickness. If you take 25 or 30 pound mono, or say 40 pound, and you have a current going by, you need a lot more lead to keep it straight up and down. And if I was going to use 4 ounces of lead, and I have 40 pound braid versus 40 pound mono, the line will stay more in direct contact with me. I won't get the belly in the line.
Right.
And in order to make up for the size difference, you have to use much more lead with mono than you do with braid.
Sure.
So you, to stay in that same contact.
So why wouldn't you use braid?
I'm
actually doing a lot of my reels, a lot of my options.
Well, the only place that I shy away from braid is shark fishing with my conventionals.
Yeah.
I want monofilament line on those. And that's more for my protection and the shark's protection than it is a line preference. Because I would much rather have the braid. Those sharks wrap up in that line, they cut themselves with the braid. It's very hard for me to handle it at the side of the boat if need be.
Mono burns, braid cuts.
Right. And that 40-pound braid, or that 40-pound mono, is my fuse. You know, that way if that lever drag gets kicked all the way forward and it gets locked down, I'm not watching a $600 rod and reel go flying out of somebody's hands into the water. If something happens and the line gets buried or birds nests, I'm not watching a $600 rod and reel go flying.
Or a customer going
that
over
40
the
pound, yeah, or a customer going over the boat.
Holding on too tight to the rod.
That 40 pound mono is my fuse.
Well, I'm kind of with you, Cale. When I'm fishing for shark on my bigger conventional reels, I've got monofilament on. And one of the nice things about it is if you get one that's really running off with some line, if you've got 300 yards of mono on that reel, when you got a big fish on, you've got, I haven't done the math, but I'm guessing if you got 300 yards out and you're under pressure, you might have 375 yards when that line starts stretching. So, you know, it gives you a little bit of leeway. And
well, I can feel when mono's going to break. I know when I'm pushing the limit on it.
Well, yeah, you hear it.
You
know it's coming.
Sounds like a guitar string.
Yep.
And with braid, it's either there or it's not.
Right. Yeah. You get no warning.
And the other time I'm going to recommend mono offshore is when somebody buys their first conventional
Absolutely.
Type reel. Not
Absolutely.
A spinning reel, not, you know, one with a bail and open thing, but more like a standard, you know, conventional pen reel. If you're just learning how to use one, it's so much better to learn with mono. A, you can get the knots out.
Right.
B, it's more controllable. It's all easier to learn with. Now, most people will switch to braid, and once you get used to using the conventional reels. But starting with braid on a conventional is never a good idea.
No, I agree with that.
I don't know anybody, including the land-based shark fishermen, who are still using reels fully loaded with braid.
Well,
most of them have gone to using a couple hundred, 200-300 yards of mono, and then putting 300-400 yards of braid underneath it for a lot of room to run. But the actual fight, the battle, the beginning hookups, the landing of the fish is done on mono now.
Yeah, and that's, I wouldn't, if I was land-based shark fishing, the last thing I would want on my big conventional is braid.
Digs in.
It digs in.
Breaks.
That is the big thing. It digs into itself. Mono will too, but there's less of a chance of doing it. And usually when you're shark fishing from land, you probably have the drag bark down a whole lot more than you will fishing from a boat where you can chase that fish.
Well,
let me throw this out to the pros here. I've got a couple conventional rods that I've rigged with fluorocarbon all the way. These are rods I would fish offshore with. And my logic was load it up with, you know, have the entire line fluorocarbon for the transparency of it.
100% on your side. The stiffness of the line makes zero difference and may even help on a conventional. And so what makes it unusable on a spinning reel makes it actually beneficial on a conventional And you've got fluorocarbon invisibility. It's 100%, my opinion, 100% on the money. Andrew?
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually taken one of my bigger conventional reels and done that. And then me being me, I was stubborn and set in my ways. I put braid back on it to shark fish. But I did notice it helped out a little bit. You know, you did get the visibility that you want out of the fluorocarbon. It was just nice for that intended purpose, but like I said, me being me, I'm stubborn and went back to my ways and filled it back up with braid because I can get that much more line on it.
It's okay to do that. I mean, what we're doing is discussing differences. So you're a braid guy. Vinny and I, I'm on Vinny's side with this one with the fluorocarbon. I think that was the smartest move. Kale, weigh in.
I think it's a colossal waste of money.
For offshore.
For offshore.
Grouper fishing and snapper fishing.
Grouper fishing, snapper fishing. I think it's a colossal waste of money. I think 6 or 7 feet of fluorocarbon leader's fine.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to... I don't think you need that invisibility throughout the entire water column. You're fishing near structure. I don't think that fish is going to say, okay, well, that first 3 feet are invisible, but what the heck is that? He's more worried about what's at the end of that hook. So I think it's a waste of money. I think if you just ran normal mono with a floor leader.
I think I got to add another microphone because when we have four people, now we've got a braid guy, a guy who doesn't think it's necessary, and two guys that think it's a great idea. So I'm going to call it, you know, using the Republican rules, that our two delegates are...
We're super delegates.
Yes, you know, actually, let's go with the Democratic rule. We're going to be super delegates, and we've overruled you guys.
Frank, here's my logic. When a lot, I think a lot of guys get out, they find a spot, say in 90 feet of water, and they might see some fish and structure down there, so they drop down, and what they're dropping down fast, they're dropping down giant hunks of lead, and you know, they might catch a grouper, but they're spooking a lot of fish too. And so my logic was, number one, use as light a weight as you can. Try to be as invisible as you can. And
see,
dropping braid down, dropping visible line down, dropping swivels down, you're spooking the school.
With your rig, it would have been perfect because a few years ago, I had invisible swivels literally made from fluorocarbon.
Yep.
We had acrylic sinkers that were made from clear acrylics, and the unfortunate part for this guy came out right as braid came out, and so it rendered the point mute.
Yes,
but I would love to be able to find that guy with those clear acrylic sinkers yet, and because with the fluorocarbon swivel, the acrylic sinkers and all that, and your fluorocarbon line hooked to fluorocarbon leader, you would have had the most invisible rig in the world. I mean, virtually, for all practical purposes, a fish would have a 90% chance of never seeing it. It would be like Casper coming down, you know? You're talking ghostly here.
The Casper rig.
Yeah, the ghost. I mean, you know, the ghost of fish caught past.
So, now, when you go offshore, Vinny, how far do you usually go?
Anywhere from Boca, 35 to 45 miles.
Okay, so you're actually getting out there in the clear water.
I don't like going that far, but unfortunately, over the last year, we've had to get on to some nice keeper grouper.
And I think that's a weather issue more than anything. I don't think, because it was only just a little while ago, that wasn't a factor in it. You could go out 10 miles, 15 miles, and catch keeper grouper, but the weather all changed. It stayed warm all winter. It did get cold, but then it got rainy and lots of fronts, and everything that would keep a fish from coming shallow when they should have come shallow was against them. Too many fronts coming through, too much of this, too much of that, too much change in the weather kept those fish out past that 30 feet of water instead of allowing them to come in around 30 feet, because 30 feet's kind of key when you get offshore because it's another atmosphere at 30 or 33 feet. And so the shallower you get, the more the atmosphere has to do with water pressure, the more it affects the fish. So they stay deeper, and they're continuing to stay deep. So you are spending a ton of money to get out there. So, you know, it's funny, when we sat down, we had no idea. And I wasn't worried. You know,
we'll put something together.
Here, I got four of us sitting here, and somebody's going to go off on a tangent somewhere, and then we're going to end up with a topic.
It was Kale that did that.
It usually is. I'm pretty good for going off on tangents.
So, you know, it's just funny because, like I say, when we started this, there was absolutely no idea what we were going to do. Anyway, just kind of getting to the end of this. Any last thoughts on this, Vinny? We'll start with you, then go to Kale, then go to Andrew.
This is more of a personal thought on my part. I'm getting closer and closer to changing some of my light tackle over to monofilament and getting off the braid. Mainly cost, you know, the cost of the braid and the transparency of the monofilament. And the evidence, like I said, you know, my fishing partner will get more hookups than I will.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a skewed pole, Vinny. Your wife's always going to outfish you. Take somebody else fishing with monofilament and see how you do.
It took everything I had not to say that. She's playing the woman's card.
You gotta even it up a little bit, man.
I'm sitting here telling myself.
I have said
this. She's playing the woman's card. There's no way you're gonna win.
Yeah, you really need to even that up a little bit. I don't see me switching my inshore stuff over to monofilament anytime soon. I like the castability of braid way too much to sacrifice that for a little bit of invisibility.
No, that was my phone going off in the other room. Okay, Andrew, your thoughts. Braid, mono, whatever.
Well, the biggest thing I try and tell people is they come down and they're so familiar using the monofilament and it's worked so well for them in the past, and then they get down here and they start using it and then get to thinking that they need to switch to braid because they see it on the TV shows, they read it in the articles, and a lot of times I ask them, have you been catching fish? Well, yeah, but why would you need to change? You're catching fish. Stick with it. Just do what you're familiar with.
Okay. Me on my final thoughts on this would be, I am on exactly both sides. I'm split right down the middle. If I'm going to fish open water for trout, snook, or redfish, you should have a rod with monofilament on there. And if you're going to fish against the mangroves for safety's sake, castability's sake, you should have braid in on it. And it goes to what I tell people every single day. This is nothing new for me. This is what I do. And it's to try and get people to think less like, I've gone into people's, you know, friends that I've met in the store here, and that, you know, I go to their house, you walk up to the garage, and they're so proud of this lineup of rods and reels that they have, and it's basically 7-foot medium heavies, and 4,000 reels on them, or 40 series reels, whatever you want to say. They're different brands, this is one brand, that's another brand. But they're basically the same rod, without a doubt. And you got to think, and God forbid, heaven help us all, we're going to have to think a little more like golfers.
Absolutely.
You don't want to take a 7-iron to do the whole course.
Right. You've never been in my garage.
But having a...
What, do you have 37 7-irons?
So, I want... usually on the flats, I'm going to 7.5, maybe 8-foot rod. Give me more casting distance. But I'm going to be putting 6, 8, or 10-pound mono on it. Something that gives me more castability, plenty of strength. And people say, well, I want 40 pounds of drag as my reel. I put 5, 10 pounds on a rod, and people can't hardly lift it off the floor.
Right.
And most of us, believe it or not, lifting your rod tip up to 12 o'clock, the friction of the guides had 2 pounds of drag. So.
Yes.
Pointing the rod at it lessens the drag by 2 pounds. But against the mangroves and where I really need that casting distance, I want a rod with braid, I want a rod with mono. And that's where you're going to find the best of all of the worlds. And the truth of the matter is, every single person here was exactly right today, because braid has great qualities that only braid has. Mono has great qualities that only mono has. And the point of all this was that, yes, the answer is they're both correct. both are the right thing to use, but figure out which one is right for the application. One is not better than the other. It's like saying an apple is better than an orange.
But it is.
Yeah, but, you know, or an orange is better than an apple. They're the same thing, but completely different.
Yep.
You know,
and for those guys that think you need 45 pounds of drag, go get your biggest rod, tie it to a 5-gallon bucket full of water, and see if you can lift that bucket off the ground. If you can't lift that bucket off the ground, and chances are you can't, you don't need 45 pounds of drag. Actually, go ahead and
that's,
do it.
No, this is another show. We're going to get into another. We're stopping right there because that's a whole other show. We'll be here another 50 minutes if we get into that.
Yeah, probably.
We're all done. We need
See, Vinny, I told you it's usually me going off on the tangent.
We need an exit strategy. We need to figure out how to get out of here. I'd like to thank my friends and my family and my coworkers, my support staff, and Vinny and Carl, or Vinny and Kale, and Captain Andrew, Captain Kale, and Vinny. We got to get you a license because we got to put some letters and numbers in front of your name here, Vinny.
Oh, I'm licensed.
Yeah.
He may not be licensed, but he is certified.
Qualified.
All right, Radio Fishing. And Frank, we out of here. Gone. Goodbye. See you later, boys and girls.